Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzel with Admiral Gary Refhead, United States Navy retired, former Chief of Naval Operations, and Joe Felter, Professor Joe Felter, both of the Hoover Institution, writing in Strategica about Taiwan. Not the Taiwan that is now integrated into the world, the global community of capitalism, and is critical for the precious items, the chips that we need for our vehicles, our very civilization. The shortage of chips is bedeviling everybody. That Taiwan is firm and confident. The Taiwan that is not is the one that is threatened by the People's Republic of China and the leader, Xi Jinping. And what the 20th century taught me when reading the history books is when bullies make remarks about what they're going to do, listen to them. So, Admiral, I come to you because in your essay, you begin by saying, what are the resources, physical and human, for Taiwan? First, the physical resources. Can they feed themselves? Can they water themselves? Can they provide energy for themselves? And what is to be done, Admiral?
Yeah, as I point out in the piece that I wrote, one of the things that I think needs to be taken into account is how dependent Taiwan is on food imports. Clearly, energy, heavily dependent on imported energy, even though I think they have a good agenda for renewables. That also introduces some defense challenges as well, because as they move to put more offshore wind in, for example, that means that those areas have to then be defended and protected. And so it's something that Taiwan really needs to consider as part of their overall defensive posture.
Joe, I turn to you about self-help and resources. The Admiral explicates that Taiwan is not at this point confident that it has a population or the food security or the energy to sustain itself. Now, those aren't weapon systems. Those are just straight up how sovereignty works. Is that something that can be addressed diplomatically? Can we suggest to Taiwan that it needs to work more on its resources into the future to make itself very difficult, a heavy cost for China if it were to seek to annex it by military force?
Sure, John. No, I think Admiral Refhead is absolutely right. Those are all part of developing Taiwan's resiliency. Consider what if it was to be blockaded and had to support itself, you know, for some period of time. So absolutely investments in resources, you know, assistance in the form of resources, but more, you know, back to my earlier point, helping Taiwan, you know, ensure that it can, you know, provide its own sustainable the resources it needs to sustain itself, like, for example, in a blockade scenario. So, yeah, you can't separate those out from strictly military factors. You know, it's all part of Taiwan's ability to defend itself and prevent China from successfully taking it over. And there's a big difference between blockading Taiwan and actually occupying and enforcing your political will on the people.
And the Admiral points out that there's a low food self-sufficiency on Taiwan. That's a puzzle to me, Joe, given that it knows that it's under siege, at least rhetorical siege. Does this mean that the people of Taiwan are not paying attention, have not learned the lessons of history, or are fatalists? How do you interpret this, Joe?
You know, externally, I would argue that I think Taiwan, there's a lot of things that the Taiwan people can do to build its resiliency and capacities to resist a Chinese attack, a blockade, or ideally ensure that China's calculus is that it has no chance of success and doesn't even try. But you hit a good point, John, as far as, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I use this term in Afghanistan, you know, the U.S. presence there, you can't want it more than the Afghans. In this case, we're going to help Taiwan and be true to our commitments in the Taiwan Relations Act. At the end of the day, they've got to want to defend themselves. And there has been a challenge. I think there's been public opinion polls in Taiwan that have indicated that perhaps some of the people in Taiwan are, you know, either not confident they can defend themselves, or confident that maybe the United States will do it for them, and maybe a little lack of, in my opinion, there's a disturbing trend of a lack of a personal or accountability by the Taiwanese themselves to defend themselves. And I think that could be dangerous and manifests itself in some ways that are, you know, really, really undermine Taiwan's future ability to defend itself.
Admiral, you have some tough statistics here about the disparity between the military force that the mainland can put in the air or on the sea and what Taiwan has now, right now. I'm not supplementing it with its allies. You especially highlight the fact that the Chinese have ground, the mainland has ground launch cruise missiles that can launch at Taiwan. That would seem a game over, but is there reason to believe that the mainland wouldn't use those launch missiles, or is that part of the we must think of the missiles as part of the invasion force?
Well, I think that we have to take into account the entire PLA arsenal. And we need to think in terms of their air force, their navy, their rocket forces, because I think that that if China were to move on Taiwan, it would use that which it has in its inventory. I also think, and one of the points that I make in my paper is that we're always thinking in terms, or there's a tendency now to always be talking about the invasion and when it would be possible. But the levers that the mainland has are there. They can squeeze Taiwan in ways that were not possible even 10 or 20 years ago, whether it's through cyber debilitating their power grid, attacking their financial system, using not just their Navy, Coast Guard, and their maritime militia to put in place a quarantine. And I make the difference between a blockade and a quarantine. A blockade would be something that is total and, by the way, is an act of war. A quarantine could be imposed, for example, for the mainland to say there will be no military supplies moving into Taiwan, and so that they could use their forces to monitor and then stop and inspect to make sure none of that was happening. And I think those are some of the things that we need to give some thought to, because, as I mentioned, China can exert a lot of economic influence, and they're one of the major maritime powers in the world today. We're still the naval power, global naval power, but quite frankly, with their ports, with their shipping companies, with their ship construction, with the economic influence that they can bring to bear, they can influence the shipping in and out of Taiwan in ways that are, in my view, quite consequential. So I think we need to start thinking about, even though Taiwan may have the desire, may have defined and designed a defensive strategy for itself, it still will need things to come into the island. And I think that those are some of the contingencies that we should be thinking about. And in that instance, it may be only the United States that would be willing to run that quarantine.
Let's turn to the scenarios that are possible in a armed conflict or an armed threatened conflict. I'm speaking to Joe Felter and Gary Ruffhead, Admiral Gary Ruffhead, Professor Joe Felter of the Hoover Institution, about Taiwan in the indefinite future. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.